Yeah, basically, the problem was this category, this partial order category, when everything was like messy. Basically, we have already considered that example, I don't remember if it's not properly.
Yeah.
So that was the point of the exercise, to see that there are categories which are very different from the usual ones. So it's not like set, it's not like CPUs, and of course there are no things like points, because the whole category is just many points, but these points are objects and they are not elements. So, and morphisms are also, they're just one kind of morphisms. So, either exists or it doesn't. That. So there was this solution. So what I'm proposing is that we maybe do the exercises still for an hour, and then switch to some new stuff. So, and what I wanted to ask you, maybe you present your solution on this that inductive proof,
okay.
Because I think it's very nice, and one can learn something from it.
Okay.
No, it's just pretty messy in there.
I thought there are many colors, and you can choose which one you want.
Is it a light?
Or the light?
I don't know.
Okay. Okay. So basically, the idea was that list is an inductive set. So lists over X. So we say that the empty list is always a list. Whenever I have an element of X and a list over X, I get a new list by putting one element in front of by putting the element in front of the list. Okay, and then part of the exercise was first to then define a monad from this. So we said that eta x of x is just a singleton list. And this is just the list you get from this construction by taking the empty list and putting x in front of it, and then we define the Kleisli star, but what we first need is concatenation, and for this I introduce the symbol plus with a circle around it. And so the thing is with this inductive structure of the lists, we can also define functions on them inductively. And so we just have to say what we get when we concatenate an empty list with some list, and what we get when we concatenate a non-empty list with such a list. So if we give these two, we have concatenation as a well-defined function on lists. And the definition is pretty much straightforward. So this works like that. And with this, we can define a class list star. And so we say that a function f, which goes from x to the list over y, we can then define f star, which goes from the lists over x to the lists over y. And then we can use the same principle. We can define this by saying what f star is on the empty list and what it is on a non-empty list. So we say f star on the empty list that would just be the empty list. And f star on a constructed list is then given by we can first take f of x, and f of x is a list over y, and f star of x is also a list over y. Of x's. So what we then can do is concatenate those two, which is why we defined this beforehand.
Right, so it's an inductive definition then. I wonder if this is how it's defined in Haskell, trying to find out the implementation of the monads, of the monad operations of the lists.
Well, it's perhaps it's just concat map. I think there is a function concat map.
Yes, but concat is not the class list star.
Yeah, but there is also a function concat map.
Yes.
As far as I know.
Which does what?
And I think that's precisely the class list star. I might be wrong, but
Yes, it's a class list star, but how it's defined?
Yeah.
So it has its own definition.
Yeah. And I'm not sure either if the class list star is just defined to be concat.
It's defined in GSC list, so it may be just low level defined. Yeah, basically, yeah, it's defined in terms of pointer.
Okay.
And, yeah. But essentially it's a similar definition if you define it from scratch, but then class list star also is inductively defined.
Okay, so with these definitions, what we then do next is verify the monad laws. And the first one is the one that eta star is the identity. And then again, the nice thing about these inductively defined functions is that we can reason about them with inductive proofs. So these two are functions which go from lists over x to itself. So to show that the functions are the same, we show that they are the same on every list. And to show that they are the same on every list, we can do an inductive proof. So we show that they agree on the empty list, and then we show that if they agree on two lists, and we concatenate. So if they agree on a list, and we put an element in front of it, that they then agree on the new list. So we have some inductive proofs, and then so we get the inductive base, which is eta star of the empty list is just, well, we use this definition, so it's the empty list, and that's of course the identity function applied to the empty list. And then the inductive step is if we have eta star of some non-empty list, then we first apply this definition, and we get so that this is eta of x concatenated with eta star of x's. And then we can apply the definition of eta, which is up there. So that's a singleton list with x. And here we can use the induction hypothesis and say that, well, this is just x's. And then it's straightforward to see that this is just the same as x put in front of x's. So we could in fact show this by saying, okay, well, this is the same as this, and then we use the definition of concatenation and arrive at this equation with two or three more steps. Okay. So the next monad law was the one about combining a star with eta. So here we don't even need an inductive proof because these are just functions defined on x. So if we have f star of eta of x, then this is just f star of the singleton list with x, and this is f of x concatenated with f star of the empty list, which in turn is just the empty list. But wait. Oh yeah, that's right. And that's just f of x, because concatenating with the empty list from the right yields just the same list. And again, we could prove this inductively, but that's pretty straightforward. Okay, so the final law is the one about combining two stars.
Yeah, so this is an interesting one. Basically, you could deal with the other ones easily anyway.
Yeah.
But here, this really shows the power of this approach of inductive definitions, because here you can really show it without any handwriting, strictly.
Okay, actually, I had to include a lemma, so I think it would be better to start with the lemma.
Yes.
The lemma is which looks like this. So basically, it's some kind of distributive law for F star. And how are we going to prove it? Well, of course, we're going to prove it inductively. So, and we're going to do this by induction on axes. The inductive base is concatenating with the empty list from the left, of course, yields just the right argument plus. So this one holds, and then for this one we just have to see that, well, this is again just the empty list. So of course we can also write this. Okay, so the inductive step. Let's see, we have F star of a non-empty list concatenated with Y's. And then by definition of concatenation, we can say that this is just the same as adjoining the element X to this X's plus Y's list, and then we can use the inductive definition of the star to say that this is the same as f of x concatenated with f star of x plus y's. Okay, and now the next step is to use the induction hypothesis. And now we're going to have to use that the list concatenation is associative, which is yet another fact about lists which can be proved in an inductive manner. So
but we are not going to dig so deep into the foundations of lists.
Yeah, well, the
so
I thought this was going to be too much.
Yes, that would definitely be too much.
This is again F star of X is a term of X. So that proves the lemma, and with this we can then tackle the Monod law. Okay, so first we're going to do the base of the induction. which is going to be G star F star of the empty list is just G star of the empty list, which is the empty list, which is G star composed with F star of the empty list. So nothing too spectacular there. And then for the inductive step, we say, well, let's suppose we have G star F star of X axis. Then this is just G star of F of X concatenated with F star of X's. And this is the point where we use the lemma. So this is G star of F of X plus G star of F star X's. And then we can use the inductive hypothesis for the right side. So this is G star of F of X concatenated with G star F. R of X's, so yeah, and see, and we can also say, this is G star, so this is the same function applied to X, the one inside the star, so this is just by definition of the star, the same thing as G star composed with F star applied to X axis, which is what we wanted to show.
Yeah.
Yep.
So this cool. Proves the third monopole. We're done.
Cool. Okay, any questions about the force? So I think we're done with it. Right? So then we can do some of the fifth one. We started the first exercise, and Hans Peter showed the one of the unit laws. Well, yes, in the meta language. So this exercise is quite shaky because it's not very well formulated. Basically, the idea was here to summarize some common knowledge about. The fact that you can do many proofs in the meta language, and this is usually more convenient as using the Gatorade language because you avoid the strings, etc. So it's some folklore knowledge which I tried to summarize here, but apparently not very well. So the theorem should state that it's equivalent to switch from monads to the meta language. So basically, I've stated the equivalence here, and so there's a paragraph saying that it's if we do give a semantics in terms of psi and phi, and this semantics happens to satisfy the Monod laws, this means that the you can define the Monod structure using the assignments below, and that's going to be a Monod. And that holds conversely, if you're if this assignment defines a Monod, then the Monod was as it is there. So, and then I basically reformulated one part of this and simplified, but the simplification is quite non-trivial. So, but I mean, since I stated that, you just can use it. So basically, instead of showing that well, you start with some phi and psi, and then eta, star, and tau defined like this, generating monod, so that this implies that the monod laws are satisfied. So what one can prove instead, so that's the point of the simplification, if psi and phi are in the first place defined standardly, so like I showed in the lecture, and then the Monod laws are satisfied.
There's a chalk.
Where?
There's a chalk.
Here?
On the table.
No, but
here?
The whiteboard.
Ah, the...
Yes. I think this is designed with the idea in mind that the people move more, so the chalk is there, the tent is there, so we go back and forth. So basically, we just assume for the direction which is indicated in the first one. So we assume that we get this semantics, we do next P, Q, T, so say. And this is. So basically, this means that we choose phi of fg equal to g star tau ij, okay. And psi that's what I call standard interpretation. So that's what we usually do, we assume a moment, but the point of the theorem was that suppose that there is no moment, but there is something instead of it, and that something generates the semantics which satisfies the moment laws, and then one can derive the moment out of it. So, but for that direction that we propose to stick to, let's assume that phi and psi, they are like this, and let's prove the missing law. So I would propose that someone does it, because so we did one unique law, and there was one other unique law left. Does someone remember which we prove? So then was this one, red x.
Yeah, that's what we proved.
Okay, so let's prove another one. Red t q is equal to q and okay. So now I immediately notice that the type of the problem.
Y gets 2x gets b.
Yes, okay. Yes. So the problem is here, of course, that well, would again need a lemma about the substitution, which I didn't, I think I didn't introduce. So let's just postulate the dilemma, and well, someone who does it can use it. Alright, so what we do here, we basically calculate g, and then as around g applied to, well, composed with an function B and spec. Yeah. That is called substitution lemma. So that's basically a standard property of this equational calculus, which is basic and it must hold. And that's something one can prove by induction. All the semantics. So maybe it would make sense to prove it. So that's maybe gonna be a bit tedious. Maybe I just prove several clauses of it. So proof. So Q is a term, it has certain size, and what you have to do here is we'll just do a case distinction, consider all the cases how Q can be constructed, and call the induction hypothesis in the suitable places. So first clause would be like this, basically. If we have Q equal to X, well, let's try it like this. Yeah, or I could just write Q equal to X. Then what we have here, we have on the left hand side X PX B, which is equal to this. Alright, so here if we assume that Q is equal to X, then beta is equal to B. So then I can write A. So and then this is just equal to F. Then what else we have to calculate? We have to calculate XA of X alone. Because it's our G. So it's just equal to PR2. So using the semantic rules, we assume that we bracket everything to the left. So hence this is a projection. And therefore I think
Well, that's just the same as the projection.
So, thank you. So it's a projection applied to this pair. And this is all G. So, all right, another case would be like if this x is some other x, so then the substitution is vacuous. So if we calculate the projection, if we calculate the substitution, then this would disappear and we would have some other variable here. So this would evaluate to some projection. And on the other hand, that would be the same projection. So we would project, this projection would go somewhere inside, and F will be discarded. So there are many other cases like this. Maybe you have got some wishes about which case I should consider. So which case would be interesting? I think the binding would be interesting, right? Because binding is the one which creates, which acts on the contexts. So, and that's a place where it's a little bit obvious. So then we have what we have on the other, on the one hand again, A, Q, so 2 times B. So we make use of the semantics there, and we get tau applied to. And it's not going to be gamma, it's going to be gamma x a and y of type c probably, or t. So what's the type of S? The type of S is C, or TC. And this is TB. This is also TB. Right? So let's also call it not including the star. Let's call it H. And let's call it W. And then we have to check this thing. Alright, so this is not B, let's call it B prime. Because B is the output type for Q, but when I'm saying that Q is of this form, then B must be of type T B prime plus N B prime, because it's a computation. So let me do here too. And what we get then, so let me substitute this. My Q is concrete, it's like this. So I have 2 y s where I substitute x, and then it's so we assume here that y is not equal to x. Otherwise, this clause is going to be modified a bit, because we wouldn't substitute here, because it would be shadow that is binding. Okay, and then we apply the semantics here. So we again calculate this gamma y c, and then c this TC. So here we can apply the induction hypothesis 2 times. Because of this, so G is a semantic of Q. So I think I've got H applied to ID, and yeah, let me just write it down, let's see if it makes sense. And it's here we've got probably W, and to ID, and So does it actually type? Okay. So there is a subtlety here, right? Because this is our age, but we want to substitute x and not y. So that's modulo permutation of the context. So in fact, strictly saying, we cannot apply this lemma. So we have to strengthen the assumption saying that this x need not be the last x, as maybe from somewhere from the middle, which is precisely the case here, because so I'm substituting this x in t, and this x is not the last x, so it's the one before. So I just want to gloss over it, and specifically I'm just gonna modify my context. So basically at this place I have got what? Gamma, and then W returns me C. So at this place I get gamma C, and what aperture is? A. And I need AC. So basically I need to include some permutation function here, which would basically swap these two elements here. So is that? Maybe just call it swap. Right, so this is the induction hypothesis, but it's an induction hypothesis not for H, but for H prime, where these two things are swapped. So that can be made work. Basically, the same argument applies, because if you switch to variables, then the complexity of the term is the same. So this induction should be ready. So what swap does, swap goes from gamma times C times A to gamma times C times A. And it works in an obvious way, and specifically swap is equal to
well, that would just be a social activity.
Yes.
Right, but we pretend we also exchange the order of the.
Ah, yes, actually, yes. It's not a social activity, it's a. No, sorry. You're right. So the order is the same. It's really a swap. So, no. The order is the same, but it's different in both sides. So we have gamma times C times A to gamma times A times C, okay? Yeah. Great, at least these types, right? So slope perturbs this thing, and H, so that's precisely what H is expecting. So right, we have to return gamma times A here, which means this is just projection to 1 times AD on this side, and on the other side it's projection to 1 composed with projection to 2. So this projection to first, and then projection to the second, and this is how you get C. And for this, you basically take the first projection here, which is gamma, and take ID on the right, which is A. So that's the explicit definition of slope. But of course, if you just look at the type, it's clear what it does. And this is if you write it down in the table. So then let's continue the calculation. Maybe instead of continuing, we can start from the other side. So this was the substitution side, and we have to compare it with the semantics of Q. So basically it's this. So I need to show that this thing is equal to this thing, because this thing is precisely the right hand side here. Instead of G, I take the concrete semantics, so that I can write a bit and obtain what? So the semantics of T, for which I have a letter. So it's H composed with tau, composed with AD, and composed with the semantics of S, to which I also have a letter, V, and this is all composed with ID F. So now I can pull something inside the brackets, right? And mainly we can get this and df.
with a comma in front of the W.
Yes, thank you. So this this can be moved to up to the front of the strings because strings is natural. So I can just write down the equation, and then actually I can probably do it in stages. So I get h star tau is it so readable? So, and then basically they can single this out. So, id times f times ad. And there we get id w id f. Right, because this thing returns me a pair. And this thing applies this to the left component of this pair and this to the right component of the pair. So I can collapse this expression by just putting this in the first place and this at the second, and the IDs will disappear. So that's why these two expressions are equal. And then I can distribute this thing. So, and I also write AT here. So, because T of ID is ID. So, and then I can write it like this, H star times T ID F. Composed with ID, double ID. This is the naturality of T. Of tau. Right, because what naturality says, it says if you have that T some pair of functions f t g to a prime times t and the strings here. Alternatively apply strings here, then you get so this is naturality of strings, and that's precisely the situation we have here, because here is tau applied to a pair. So tau applied to a pair, and this is now pair under T applied to tau.
The tau somehow meant went missing, but
yeah. So now it's quite similar, isn't it? Right, so we've got this expression and that expression at the bottom, they are almost the same. So this tail with tau ID, etc. is the same one as there. So we've got just these two things which are different. Let's check them. Well, basically, I can continue this calculation. Because, so I can also put this t under the star. I don't know if we probably didn't prove anything like this. So there's a law, f star tg is equal to fg star. That's the law which I'm going to apply now, because that is what simplifies it. But that's, I didn't have it before. Okay, so that's actually a lemma which is needed here. Why it's true? Well, because we know that the functor action is expressible via the star and eta. So we've got eta star, g star, and then we use one of the laws saying that this is equal to this, and then it's equal to f g star. So hence we can get h, and then d f times id. So, and this must be equal to h swap idf. So I believe this is something one can see basically I can start writing on this side. Because swap has a concrete definition, so I can substitute it here. Instead of swap, I take this thing, PR 1 times PD, PR 2 times PR 1, swap times ID. So in here I take so we believe it's PR1 R2 square not the same. Something doesn't work, right? So something forward doesn't type check. So again, what effort runs? Effort runs A. So this would be A. So I somewhere lost one another PR1. So there must be a PR1 before F. Then or not, this wouldn't help. So if we just wanted to write this thing, it would be PR1. So that's equivalent. So it, now I just lost it somewhere. So there must be yet another PR1 before F. There's no way where it's lost. One should check the types they currently can find out. I don't know. Didn't notice where this happened. Right. So anyway, that was the hardest case. So the other ones are simpler. I didn't want to try to check it offline. Need to take a picture of the board. Anyway, so that was the lemma which one needs for pulling the thing. And. Right. Did anyone try to prove it? Did you prove, try to prove it?
Yeah.
And did you need the same one?
I think so. There was a.
Is it?
I wasn't in the script.
In a different script?
Yeah, no, in a different
So yes, yeah, okay. But I still it wasn't provable. Yeah, but that's okay. At least I told you about it. At least I didn't forget that. Right. So you can. So this formulation was the sound about the soundness. So it's something you can prove on the equational calculus. So and basically we are now justifying that the equational calculus is correct. It is sound. So the fact that substitution lemma is a provable principle wouldn't help you here, because here you need it on the semantics level. So before we prove that the equation is in sound with respect to semantics, we cannot just use this principle from there. We need counterparts of them. Okay, so is it too late to prove?
I don't know. I think I only have one proper write-up of it, and I gave it to you. Do you have it with me?
Yes. I didn't check it yet. It was your sign. Which do you know? So maybe wait, I take a picture of the board, because I'm interested in where the glitch is. Something that we do quite regularly. Might be quite readable from there. Okay.
was good.
In general, it could be GPU. Okay, so then this was just this one we could just use the definition of phi for, and this in turn. So we had, okay, we only have phi of fg, so I guess we can just add this line. So we have this is phi of so this is phi applied to this FMG. And now we can just use this definition to say, okay, this is G star composed with tau composed with the identity on gamma, and then we have this F, but this F the term in here is the red term, so we use the psi, and so we get that this is the same as beta A composed with
so perhaps you could call that later thing F, because the
original
F is
not very useful. Perhaps that's better. So let's say this is F. Then we do the same idea as before. We split this, and we get the identity on the gamma cross beta A. And then the identity gamma paired with F now.
Yeah, and then supposedly some diagram applies,
right? Right. So we get that this thing is in fact the same as eta gamma cross A. And then the next thing. okay, so now we have a star and an eta. So this is just G composed with a pair of identity in F.
Yeah, and now you're done by the lemma, right? Assuming that you have it.
Yeah.
So this, what you obtained is just the semantics of the right-hand side, provided you have the level.
Yeah. So these G and F are exactly G and F on the lemma, and so we get this. P substitute for X. Yeah.
Right, this is it. If you know the lemma, of course.
Yeah.
I think it's also possible to offer lemma.
Really?
I cannot do something. If, well, basically, I abstracted the context gamma and then I applied it. And then by the legitimation of application, you get this substitution.
Yeah, well, so the problem is this may not work because abstraction doesn't work.
Well,
because we do this all in generic category, in a generic category, whatever.
Okay, I see.
Yeah.
I can't assume that composition is defined as.
You may not be able to write things like lambda, because what is lambda? I mean, this is indeed good that you notice it, because precisely all this calculation is to a large extent so difficult is because we want to do them, to have them in categories, not beyond sets. Because in sets, as I mentioned, every moment is strong, so you can simplify everything because you don't need to mess up with the strings at all. Because a string is basically some lambda expression, and if you do the calculation in sets, you may not notice at all that you need strings because you just use this lambda abstraction and the calculations with lambda without noticing that there's something fundamental around there. But that's just because we're in sets. And if we are not in sets, it all becomes like this. And this is something that you do not notice from Haskell, as I also said. But so that's my problem. I do not. I didn't have a very good idea how to present it better because I hesitated if I wanted to involve the strings. But if you don't involve the strings, then basically you need to somehow make do without it every time, and then you cannot prove, for example, that it's reasoning in terms of do with equivalence and reasoning about the strings. So I don't know how to avoid it and without just eliminating lots of theoretical business from this course away. So if we eliminate the strings, that we would need to change the course in such a way that it's going to be more or less a passing course. Yeah. I don't know, I will try to present this better somehow. So, well, alright. Then I wanted to tell a little bit about some new stuff. And, right, so we do the rest of this exercise next time. And what I was going to tell about is basically yet another moment.